Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to listen to more of America This Week, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Now back to America This Week, live with Father Matt Malone and Carrie Weber.
We are back. You're listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. I am Carrie Weber, along with Father Matt Malone, and we are speaking with Kenneth Woodward, and we invite you to join the conversation at 1-888-3-CATHOLIC. That's 1-888-322-8465. We're talking with Kenneth Woodward about his years editing Newsweek's religion section and about his new book, Getting Religion, Faith, Culture, and Politics from the Age of Eisenhower to the Era of Obama. Mr. Woodward, you talk about the importance of being there as, you know, as a reporter for Newsweek and sort of recognizing also your own perspective in being there and how those two things sort of shape how you go about a story and but also shape your life. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how sort of being there, being a witness to all these events of faith and religion as a reporter has worked to shape both your view of those events and then perhaps a bit your own faith life as well.
Well, look, first of all, this book, just to be clear, is not about Catholics alone. So that one of my great experiences there, and one of the meanings of the title, Getting Religion, is getting it, understanding the religion's not my own. I did that in a very formal way with my book on the function of the miracle stories in five world religions. But, you know, when I first covered an Episcopal bishop's meeting, I had never seen a married bishop. And I watched the wives, you know, knitting in the back and saying, oh, I wish my John would shut up, you know. He just talks too much. You get perspectives. But I was there. If I had been there with the bishops instead of with the women, I wouldn't have got that sense. Well, how does a wife of a bishop respond when, he's up there in debate at the conference? That was something different. My father was a salesman when I have a... And this book is full of stories. It really is an excuse, by the way. To be perfectly honest with you, I wrote the book because I had, as any good writer would, because you have stories to tell, and the stories really make the book run. I remember being with Billy Graham and watching him edit a tape of his a crusade, and I said, "What up, Billy? You're watching yourself. What are you thinking?" And I thought he'd say, "Well, you know, I could have made it shorter here, you know." Reflecting on how he might have improved his performance. And he said, "I don't think of myself there. I think of the Spirit of God talking through me." Well, that's an aha moment. That's an insight moment, as Father Lonergan might have said.
Right.
Because, first of all, he was witnessing to me, saying, "We believe that the Holy Spirit speaks through us." But I think he really did. And I saw that for the first time for evangelicals of that stripe. The preaching is a verbal sacrament, and I say so in the book. It's a sense that Christ is present through these words, and I don't think that Catholics and others who are Eucharistic-centered have a high degree of sacramentalism in their religion realize the extent to which that is true, so that for evangelicals, if they don't hear a good sermon, they really haven't been to church. And by the way, I might add that Billy never went to church much on the road, and you could see why, because walking into church, the guy suddenly looks up, the preacher does it, he sees Billy Graham sitting there. It'd be a little disturbing. But
he didn't.
A little intimidating.
On the other hand, he preached all the time, and by listening to himself preaching, he had been to church.
Right.
Because that's what church is. And then you learn to differentiate between your own experience and the sense of this highly, oral experience that is preached Protestant Christianity. Very different. So there are some things there that you learn, and sometimes you learn them in odd moments. So being there is terribly important.
It is. And, you know, I was very struck by something that you wrote about in the book and you mentioned in our last segment, and that is you're right. I grew up in Massachusetts, and we used to have the joke, right, that, you know, Mrs. O'Malley is walking with her son to the polling booth, and the son says, "Mom, what if God is a Republican?" And Mrs. O'Malley says, "Well, why would he change his registration after all these years, right?" and you know, my own mother was part of that generation that felt like the Democratic Party left her, after 1972. And yet nothing has ever really taken its place. You know, there were certain elements of the Catholic Church that sort of flirted with the religious right in this country, but we are in a sense, you know, a lot of us Catholics feel utterly homeless in the American electorate, and that's a big change, isn't it?
Well, I certainly do, and I find that. It's helpful that as a journalist, and we didn't know who our fellow journalists were, whether they were Democrats or Republicans. You had to assume that being journalists, they were liberal rather than conservative. And just as you would assume that most Rotary Club members are conservative rather than liberal, at least in the old days. Mm. So it went with the territory, and that's, or it went with the profession. But I think that, that really helps. I just haven't for a long time been able to identify with either party. But there's a, as I talk about in the book, maybe not that well, but there's a certain righteousness that has gone since McGovern. I call it the Methodist moment in the Democratic Party. There's a certain righteousness there. And there's a good part to the righteousness, and there's a grinding part to the righteousness.
Right.
And you see it. I saw it when I interviewed Hillary Clinton in the White House in 94, but you see it, you hear it in her today, too, when she went off a little bit about, well, these people in the deplorable basket or whatever it was that she said.
The deplorables, yeah, referring to the Trump supporters.
It's a little sense of, we know what's good for you, we are the righteous ones. And it is rather grinding. That said, we all know the history of the connection between Democrats and Catholics. But it also worked the other way because Archbishop Iakovos, when he was alive, head of the Greek Orthodox Church, came from Massachusetts, and he said, "We're mostly Republicans." And he says, "You want to know why? Because the Catholics were Democrats." So the reverse could work as well.
Isn't there a way in which that kind of increasingly moralistic politics, that increasingly moralistic language and stridency, kind of goes hand in hand with the trajectory toward secularism over this period? Like, it seems to me that in a country that it's becoming increasingly secular, right, that is living in the imminent frame, as Charles Taylor would call it, right, that it has kind of lost sight of what is transcendent and is focused on the here and now, that kind of, in a way, inevitably leads to a more moralistic politics. Do you think that that's related in some way?
You know, I don't know about that. I have to think about it. But I do want to say this, and it almost hurts to say, but the whole civil rights movement, the whole idea of liberating people. Now, we liberated Eastern Europe. We taught liberation theology before there was one back in the 40s and 50s and when I was a kid. But it means outsider groups are going to be liberated, and no distinction shall be made, no judgment shall be made. Poor Pope, he gets hit over the head with that misunderstood quote all the time. The running away from judgment. This is something else that's going on, and it's a running away from a certain kinds of consideration. I'd like to say one other thing. briefly about the book, I would be interested in readers paying attention to the categories that I use to describe the different ways in which we get religion, namely through the family, neighborhood, networks, the old-fashioned way, the kind we've been talking about here in Massachusetts, embedded religion. That's a different experience of religion than what happened after the Civil Rights Movement when we got something called movement religion,
right.
where you may be, let's say, Unitarian, or you may be Catholic, you may be Presbyterian, you may come from Columbus, Georgia, or more likely Boston or Cleveland. That didn't matter. What mattered was the movement. And I have some criticism of Daniel Berrigan or the Berrigan brothers in there, because the movement takes precedence. But we've seen that in subsequent movements, whether it's gay and lesbian, whether it's the women's movement, so forth. Being in the movement is the most important thing, and that modifies the religion in the same way that entrepreneurial religion, which is my word for evangelicalism, if you look at it closely, evangelicalism is in many ways, not theologically speaking, but sociologically, free enterprise in religion. And they have a natural bent towards free enterprise. And that's part of the bond between, or that exists, and lesser so now, between evangelical Americans and the Republican Party.
You're listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. We're talking with Kenneth Woodward, the former religion editor of Newsweek, about his new book, Getting Religion, Faith, Culture, and Politics from the Age of Eisenhower and Obama.
Now, Kenneth Woodward, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about sort of the evolution of religious journalism as we know it today. A lot of media outlets no longer have even the religion section or a religion reporter. What advice would you have for media outlets that are covering faith and religion today, and for reporters who are looking to kind of try to tell these stories that you've been paying attention to for so long?
Well, I think they have to be educated in the religious dimensions of public affairs. I will tell you, I came to the conclusion after writing this book that there's almost no connection between the religious identity, strong or weak, of a candidate for the presidency and the policies that follow. All the polls tell us is how certain religious groups voted, but there is almost no connection. Woodrow Wilson, you might say his Calvinist character led to a certain stiffness at Versailles, or you could say I do cite one, Bush Jr.'s faith-based initiative, but that was just a warmed-over version of his father's Thousand Points of Light.
Right.
So there really isn't a connection there.
And sometimes there's a radical disconnection.
Question,
right?
But I think it's an important point to remember.
And sometimes there's a radical disconnect. Like Nixon was a Quaker and his mother was a pacifist and he bombed Cambodia, right?
Yeah. You're not going to tell what they're going to do. Who knew that Bush Jr. was going to respond the way he did? And we can go through these things. Now, I'm more like Mark Knoll, evangelical, just retired from Notre Dame, historian. He wrote a wonderful letter saying why he couldn't really support either side. You don't want to be caught in the middle, but I don't think any of these things, either of these parties, really reflect what I think of as my religion-derived view of the way things are and ought to be. At the same time, we talk about all these divisive issues, abortion, Planned Parenthood, and all this sort of thing. And while it's true, these will be affected by who gets elected to the Supreme Court, most of what a president does is conduct foreign policy and propose domestic programs. But they ride hard on these emotional issues when they're running for the president. And I often think that this, in these days, you might call them the latter days if you're apocalyptic, that these political identifications have taken on some of the weight of religious identifications, or that religion had in the past.
Oh, I think that that's absolutely true. And my own suspicion is that it's related to this secularizing tendency that I was talking about earlier. But there is a way in which ideology has displaced theology, and you know, the movement has displaced the churches as the kind of locus of the of you know, our own our self identity and our self understanding as community. And you know, and that has made politics even more important. I was out in Aspen, Colorado recently, and David Brooks said something that was very, very interesting at a seminar out there. He said, you know, in order for our democracy to succeed, our politics has to become less important, right? And he was talking about the fact that our politics has taken on this kind of existential, moralistic quality that he thinks is inherently divisive.
I see it.
Yeah.
I see it everywhere. I see it in my kids. Like, you're trying to sort of temper with them about that. Be prepared to be disillusioned and by what you vote for. But, there's one other thing I'd like to mention. It's something that, as I finish the book, I look back over. But it's a whole sense of belonging to institutions. You were nice enough to mention it in American Magazine. But the different social script that almost every grandparent sees in their own grandchildren, it's a totally different world. And any institution they deal with, including schools, are used for utilitarian purposes.
Right.
It will get me ahead. And so on. They're very tentative about this sort of thing. And the only institution that really means anything to them is the family, because they're so increasingly dependent, much more dependent on the family than I was, and the people of my generation, and they don't form families of their own until, if they've been to college and so on, until the early 30s. All that work that Christian Smith has done has not been attended to like it should, and I think it should, and I think I would say finally that. Because I was thinking about this, I witnessed, people of my journalists of my generation witnessed the decline of the mainline Protestant churches,
right?
And for various reasons, but we see the exact same pattern taking place, I'm convinced, among the Catholics. And the reasons why would take another program, certainly,
right?
but I don't think they realize that it's going on, and I know that if they paid more attention to the kind of work that Christian Smith has done, they'd have some clues as to what is going on.
Indeed, they would. Indeed, they would.
Successful generations of Catholics haven't cared that much about how Catholic their kids are going to be.
Hmm. Well, the book is Getting Religion, Faith, Culture, and Politics from the Age of Eisenhower to the Era of Obama. Ken Woodward, thanks so much for being with us today.
Pleasure being with you.
Okay. When we come back, the Archbishop of Milwaukee talking about the upcoming Pallium Lecture. You're listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to hear the full show every week, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.